Hello and welcome to another edition of the NBA Outlet presented by OTGBasketball.com. Make sure you follow OTG on Twitter at OTGBasketball. Also hit that subscribe button. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me today, OTG's Jesse Corwin and Jonathan Ibrahim. What's up, guys?
Hey, guys. Always great to be on. You guys ready to talk some free agency or what?
Hey, guys. Good to talk to you. Jesse here. Jonathan, happy belated Canada Day to you. Everyone else, happy 4th. Let's get it going.
Yeah, let's get it going. You know, we talked about some guys yesterday on the pod for free agency, so we're going to touch on the guys from late last night and today. So we're going to start off with Joe Ingles. This is actually a pretty big signing. 4 years, $52 million. This was a hot guy on the market. You know, a lot of teams were looking at him. The Clippers were looking at him. I think Orlando threw some money at him, but he stayed in Utah, and this is big for the Jazz.
Yeah, this is a nice deal for the Jazz, too. And some teams, especially in smaller markets, they have a tendency to overpay for guys like Ingles, and I think they got a good deal here.
Yeah, I agree. I think this was big. Also, we look at it from the Hayward angle. Same agent, you know what I'm saying? So there's something to be had there. The two said to be, pretty tight together. And, you know, he's a pretty good player, pretty undervalued. He came to the Garden last year. I watched him shoot around. And he is, he's no joke from deep. I've always appreciated his game. So I think that's a steal for sure.
Yeah, I like the price too. Jonathan mentioned, you know, I think Orlando offered him 4 years, $60 million. So keeping a player like Ingles, and, you know, a lot of people think, you know, he's just a great three-point shooter, but this is an all-around good player, high basketball IQ. And like you said, the relationship with Hayward, and there was some talk and reports that Hayward was unsure if the Jazz were willing to put money out for players. So, you know, this kind of helps them in that cause.
Yeah, between that and Rubio, that's a big deal. So we'll see what happens here in the coming days.
Exactly. Moving on to a guy that's not as known, and that's Wayne Selden. This was a D-League call-up last year for the Grizzlies. He played some postseason minutes for them. So, you know, not a bad signing at all. He's a young guy, maybe develop a little bit more.
Yeah, guys, I think this is I'm sorry. Go ahead, Jonathan.
No, go ahead. Finish your point.
That's no, fine. I think this is, like you said, I think this is a really good value. Whenever you see numbers that, you know, 2.8 million for 2 years, you look at the guy and see what he can bring to the table. It's a Boston guy. He's from Roxbury, just south of the city. Of course, we know him from Kansas, and I was actually surprised when he didn't get drafted at all. I thought he was a pretty good player coming out of school a couple years ago. And I think this is a really good value signing, and like you said, he got some valuable he played in all six games, I think, last year in that Grizzlies Spurs series, so he's definitely bringing some grit to the table. I think it's a good signing.
Yeah, it's a low-risk, kind of moderately high-reward situation here for them. He had a couple good games. He tended to play just where when they had some garbage time to play out there. But like you said, played in the playoffs, and he showed a bit of promise, and he's been rewarded for it.
Yeah, but he's got that beef that they love in Memphis. You know what I mean? He's like 230, strong guy. He kind of works into their system really well. I think it's a good fit.
And not to mention the Grizzlies are kind of cap-strapped from that Chandler Parsons contract last year, so they need to kind of find a way to get good value on some of these young guys that maybe can pop up. But talking about a guy that we know is a great player, and this guy was a hot commodity too, and that's Andre Iguodala. He decided to go back to the Bay, 3 years, $48 million. You know, there was a real chance of him going to Houston, but he stays in the Bay. What are your guys' thoughts on this signing right here?
I think it's a smart signing by the Warriors. It's not too long of a deal, so they can keep him around to keep that kind of core intact. And then as he gets up there in age, we'll be able to take that $60 million or $17 million off the books.
Yeah, I was honestly shocked by this, and you know, a little disappointed. But no, I mean, it's obviously a great sign. I mean, he's like the glue guy, right? The kind of guy who's like a championship type player. You bring him off the bench. And, I think it's a great fit. I mean, we're looking at a serious luxury tax bill here for the Golden State Brass, though. They're already, you know, well over that, what's expected to be around, you know, 9,900 mil cap here. They're already, I think, 130 mil plus, still some roster spots to fill. So we'll see. But, I mean, Iguodala is the man for sure. I've always been a big fan of his.
Yeah, they definitely needed to keep him. He was that guy they brought off the bench, and he kind of kept things steady. Obviously, he was huge in the finals. You know, he played a big portion of a lot of those games as well. But I thought it was kind of surprising because, you know, going to the offseason, all we heard was, you know, Iguodala's not going to leave. He's going to resign for sure. But then he had all those meetings, then the meeting with Houston, and then canceling the rest of the meetings. It was definitely a concern. I mean, it's good for the Warriors that he brought back. It would have been cool to see what he could do on the other team. But,
yeah,
no.
Yeah.
I can't help but think that the Warriors overpaid for him, though. I can't help but think that. We're talking about a guy who comes off the bench, plays 20, 25 minutes. I know about the intangibles. I know about the fact that he's a glue guy. But $16, $17 million for a glue guy? I don't know. I don't know.
Well, I think in a vacuum, like, you wouldn't be shocked, right, if the Sixers or the Lakers threw that kind of cash at him. But, yeah, I mean, going back to the Warriors, and like we said, like, them being seriously strapped with the cap, that, you know, 16 mil a year or whatever, that's, you know, and they had a first offer as well, and then they upped that after it kind of looked like he might hit the road. So, yeah, I mean, that's some serious cash. I didn't think they'd pony up that much.
Were you guys surprised that he gave him that he got the third year and it wasn't a 2-year deal, or?
I think if it was going to be a 2-year deal, I don't think he would have taken it. I think at his age, right, those types of players are kind of they're looking for their big last contract, and for Andre Iguodala, this is exactly what that is.
Yeah, this takes him to what, like age 36 or something like that. So, and you know, he canceled that meeting with Philly. I thought he might head back to Philly with them, but yeah, I think you're right. I think the third year was definitely a big deal for him.
Moving on to another pretty well-known free agent, that's Serge Ibaka. You know, Ibaka decided to re-sign with the Toronto Raptors. You know, this is a good sign for them. There was some question about the Raptors if they would go full, they'd go into that young swing, or they'd keep Lowry and Ibaka. So it looks like they'll probably keep Lowry too. What are your guys' thoughts on this?
Personally, I'm not a Lowry fan myself. I think he comes up small when it matters most, personally. I think he's a great regular season point guard. He's tough. But I think when he plays some of those bigger guys with, you know, with longer reach, he just really gets, you know, his little stop turnaround shots. He doesn't get them off, et cetera. So I think you're right. I think this is a precursor to them trying to bring him back. But, you know, Ibaka last year, career high from three, you know, shot close to 40%. I think he's that good stretch four and a good player for sure. But, you know, I don't know if you guys heard these reports from last week. And we know he's from the Congo, that he might not actually be 27, like straight out of Major League Baseball. And so he, you know, yesterday he came out, he's like, I am 27 or whatever. And then, you know, and then signed the deals. But yeah, I mean, that's a lot of cash for him.
Yeah, it's a good deal for both sides. I think the Raptors and Ibaka kind of benefit from this. Interestingly enough, I've been hearing that that he's going to be playing a lot more center for the Raptors this year, which means Jonas Valanciunas is going to kind of be taking a backseat role to Serge. So it'll be interesting to see if they try and move that contract. And I've also heard that they're going to be targeting Paul Millsap going forward, and if he'll be involved in that contract and a sign and trade with Atlanta, that would, you know, kind of be an interesting situation for them.
I mean, that would make a lot of sense. You know, he was pretty effective at the five in the postseason, and Valanciunas has obviously been really inconsistent for the Raptors. So, I mean, getting Millsap, and I think any team that gets Millsap is really going to benefit. We'll kind of touch on him a little bit more later. But I think Ibaka at the five position, especially with the way the NBA is going and his shooting ability, definitely helps the Raptors.
Yeah, that's a good fit. Also, you know, P.J. Tucker hitting the road, that's a major factor. They kind of needed to bring him back. So,
well, that's the next point we're going to hit on right there. P.J. Tucker, you know, he leaves Toronto. They traded for him last deadline. He heads to Houston. He obviously, I think, took a little bit of a pay cut. 4 years, $32 million. Do you think he's going to help Houston? He gives him that toughness, that defense.
Jonathan, what do you got?
Well, we got a chance to watch P.J. Tucker where I play a little bit up in Toronto here for a while. He's a tough player. He brings a lot of grit. He's a no-nonsense type of player. Kind of got those star guys in Toronto on the right page going into the playoffs. Lowry and DeRozan, they're not really known as, you know, players with a huge winning mentality or a chip on their shoulder, but he definitely brought that to the team, and they're going to miss it. But yeah, it's a good pickup for Houston. I don't know how he fits with their system as well, but he's definitely the defensive stopper they need. So it'll be interesting to see how that works out.
Yeah, see, I think this is a great fit, great signing for the Rockets. Exactly what the doctor ordered for them. Of course, not a huge offensive threat, but I don't think offense will be a huge problem for them. They do lose, you know, some defensive presence on the perimeter. But, yeah, P.J. Tucker, I like his style, man. He's a hard-nosed guy. And, you know, you guys probably recall him and Harden getting into some classic matches back in the day with the Suns and Rockets too. So be interesting to see how he fits. But I think that's a good fit at a good price for them.
Yeah, I mean, and you look at, you know, the Western Conference and all these good perimeter players, and if you're going to win, you get to a championship, you're going to have to beat the Warriors. So you need these tough wing defenders that are going to help you slow down the Kevin Durants and the Klay Thompsons. Mm-hmm. So I think this is a great signing for the Rockets. It hurts the Raptors, but, you know, what are you going to do? I think they might just look to go another direction, because if they're going to obviously need their money if they're going to go after Millsap, which would be huge. But another tough guy, and that's Taj Gibson. He signs with his former coach in Minnesota, Tibbs, on a – what is it? He's on a 2-year, $28 million deal. He'll probably play a lot of that four. He may start. I don't know if they're going to go with him or Gorgui Dieng. What do you guys think about this signing, him reuniting with Tibbs?
I've always been a big Taj Gibson fan. I mean, he is he's, you know, in that mold of PJ Tucker, no nonsense guy. A little older now, you know, like early, I think he's like 32. So I think watching him last year, he definitely has lost a step, but I mean, that interior presence and, you know, reuniting with Tibbs, I think is huge. I think that's, you know, that's a great fit for them. Definitely.
Yeah, it'll definitely benefit those young guys in Minnesota to be around a kind of tougher, defensive-minded guy. He's a great fit with them as a player coming off the bench, and I think he'll fit great alongside Karl-Anthony Towns.
Are you guys concerned that they should have went for more shooting at that four spot? Or is it okay to go with Taj?
I think Gibson's the fit because you have so much youth there. I think you want to try and get those guys reps. And, you know, we'll see if they add kind of a lower level outside shooter at some point. But, you know, bringing in Teague, who I think is a great distributor with Gibson under the basket. And then you have, you know, some of those other guys there. And, of course, you know, Butler now hanging out at the Mall of America. I think that's a good fit. And, you know, you want – I think they want Butler to be the man and to get as many shots up as he wants. So I don't think that's a major concern.
I actually don't think they went in the wrong direction at all. I think they did the right thing. Minnesota already have quite a bit of three-point shooting. Karl-Anthony Towns can shoot from the outside. Even Gorgui Dieng can shoot a little bit from the outside. So I think they needed that kind of interior toughness a little bit more so than they needed perimeter shooting.
And then, you know, you get more at the Chicago reunion because you mentioned the Jimmy Butler. So guys know each other. He brings that veteran presence, and that's something obviously you need for a young team. Just a quick touch on the Timberwolves. Obviously, they made the move for Butler. They signed Taj Gibson. They pick up Teague. Where do you see this team in the Western Conference next season?
I mean, if they're in the East, we're looking at a 3 or 4 seed probably. But West, it's going to be tough. I think they do sneak into the back end of the playoffs. You know, I don't think they'll go anywhere from there. But I think, you know, it's going to be all about fit. But like you said, I don't think those relationships can be undervalued with Tibbs, you know, having the relationships with Butler and Taj Gibson in the past. I think that automatically kind of brings in that leadership at the top right there. Teague's a veteran by all accounts, like a really great guy and a good leader. So I think they've done a really just fantastic job this offseason. So, yeah, I mean, I put them, you know, near the bottom of the Western Conference playoff picture this year.
Well, it'll be interesting with Chris Paul leaving the Clippers, and it'll be interesting to see what happens with Gordon Hayward, whether or not he moves east. But let's say he moves to Boston. I mean, that fourth and fifth spot kind of opens up, and Memphis haven't really gotten a lot better. OKC have gotten better, but, I mean, we'll have to wait and see how that's going to work out with Paul George and Russell Westbrook. So if depending on how well the young guys develop, and, I mean, they added a lot of talent, Jimmy Butler, Jeff Teague, like you said. So I could see them climbing up to that same position Utah was in this year.
See, I think you have a lot of good points there, Jonathan. I just think it'll take, you know, no, it's going to take till, you know, after New Year's or something, till they really start to figure it out, maybe the All-Star break, and then they really start to run. I think they will be a tough first-round matchup in the playoffs. I just think early on it's just so many variables to figure out. But, yeah, they'll be good for sure.
Typically, I tend to agree with you, but I think with this core group already having played a season under Thibodeau, Jimmy Butler coming in, having already played multiple seasons for Thibodeau before, I think it's going to be a little bit more seamless than it would be if this was, you know, another team with a different coach.
Yeah, could be. Yep.
And I think one thing, too, is they're going to probably want to solidify their bench, you know, maybe add a veteran there, too, just to get things rolling. But moving on to the next guy, Jody Meeks. This is a guy, you know, who is doing pretty well. He's dealt with a lot of injuries over the last few years. He can shoot the ball. He signed with the Wizards 2 years, $7 million. And, you know, gives John Wall another weapon on the outside if he stays healthy.
Yeah, I've always been a Meeks guy. Like, him coming out of college, he was one of those guys where you're like, he's going to be really good, right? And I think he's been in the league, I don't know, 7, 8 years, 5 teams or so. So you wonder, is it a character thing? Like you said, he's had some of the issues. But I think this is a great punch off the bench. We saw, you know, we saw with the Wizards, Wall and Beal just having to, in that Celtics series, just – play nearly the full game. And I mean, to have this kind of scoring punch off the bench to kind of spell either one of those and spread the floor. And we all know Beal and Wall are at their best when they're getting to the bucket. And that's going to spread the floor even more for them. I think it's a good fit. He was really good last year when he played, you know, he was hurt with the Magic for some time, but I think he was like near, you know, 40% from three.
Yeah, like you said, he's a great punch off the bench. He kind of shores up that second unit a little bit, kind of let them down in the playoffs. So I think it was a move that they really needed, and I think he really helps them out, adds a little bit more shooting from the perimeter. I think it's a good pickup.
And when they have limited options too, and they got the whole Otto Porter decision to make, if they're going to match his offer. And he's probably going to get a max from either Brooklyn or Sacramento, it looks like. So they're going to be in a tough situation. They'll be kind of
crazy. What world are we in right now? Oh, my God. Okay, yeah.
we'll touch a little bit more on the restricted free agents later. But moving on, Amir Johnson, a move from Philly right there. 1 year, $11 million. Good deal for both sides. Amir gets paid. Philly gets a veteran for 1 year, and they get cap flexibility for next year.
Yeah, anytime you can bring in, I think for the Sixers right now, anyone on a 1 year deal, no matter what you pay him, really a veteran is pretty smart. And Amir Johnson, I think he always kind of got a bum rap in Boston because Boston sports fans just hate you if you're not Larry Bird, basically, but or Robert Parrish. So he's a good player. He's a tough player, and I think he's exactly what the 76ers need. He's been in the league, 13 years? I think he was one of the last dudes, maybe the last guy who made the jump high school to pros. So he's like 30 years old, but he's been around a while. And, us fans in Boston know he can even hit that corner three if you leave him alone for 5 or 6 seconds.
Yeah, we had a lot of opportunities to watch Amir play up here in Toronto, obviously. And he's one of those guys where everything he does doesn't show up in the box score. He's not a, off the charts rebounder, off the charts shot blocker, but he does all the little things you can ask from a guy. I think Philly got a great player. Kind of wanted to see him come back to Toronto and maybe fill in as a bench role. He's a beloved player here in Toronto, but Philly got a great player, and they might have paid a little bit much for him, but on a 1 year contract, there's really not a whole lot of risk there.
Yeah.
And like you guys mentioned, he's just a veteran that Philly needs. With adding all the talent they have now and, looking at maybe making the postseason this year as a lower seed, they're going to need to add vets to kind of solidify things going forward there. Another guy who actually played in Philly, Michael Carter-Williams, he signs a one-year deal with the Hornets, $2.7 million. Not much here. Michael Carter-Williams, a guy who was won Rookie of the Year back in the day for the Sixers, and then he just kind of fell down from there.
Jonathan, what do you got on him?
I'm still trying to wrap my head around this guy. I mean, he came in with such a great opening season, and it's just been downhill from there. It's just been one stop after another of disappointment. And I like to see him be successful, kind of go back to – he's a big point guard. Usually they have a size advantage defensively, but, his inability to shoot well from outside has kind of hurt him. So I don't know. I'm still – even after 3 or 4 years, I'm undecided on this guy.
Yeah, I think you can get in line with pretty much everybody else too. Yeah, so again, another 1 year deal. I think, like Jonathan said earlier, with a couple guys, low risk, high reward for Jordan. Down year last year, of course, they did just the Hornets just declined that team option on Ramon Sessions as well, helping out Kemba. So I think this is a needed addition, and maybe you strike gold with this guy. We'll see.
Well, one nice thing I think people mentioned is Michael Carter-Williams, like you guys said, is a little bit bigger guard, so you can play him with Kemba, and he can guard the two position a little bit, and it kind of lets Kemba play off-ball a little bit offensively where he doesn't have to take as much of a beating like he did last season, and he kind of faded as the season progressed.
Yeah, he really does take a beating, for sure.
So, another backup point guard signed, a guy that catches a lot of hate around the league, and that's Jose Calderon. He signed with the Cavs 1 year, $2.3 million in that backup role. What do you guys think of this? Is Calderon even going to play for the Cavs, or do you think he's going to mostly sit on the bench?
I think it's a good fit. I think it's a good fit for them. Again, they don't have a lot of cash to spend. We know that, of course. And as they continue to try and kind of rework that roster and maybe get some non-guaranteed contracts and some trades or something, try to bring somebody else in. But Calderon, again, we spoke earlier about, guys just getting tired in the playoffs. I think I referred to the Wizards a little bit, but we saw just how much some of these star players like Kyrie play, in the playoffs, and that may not change. Although, of course, Calderon not nearly the same ilk, but I've always been a Calderon fan. I think he brings a lot of energy, intensity, and I think he's definitely a spark plug off the bench.
Sorry, I got to disagree here, and I want to preface this by saying that I was a big Jose Calderon fan, especially when he was in Toronto, but he doesn't really fit the bill as to what the Cavs need. He's a terrible defender. He doesn't shoot the three ball nearly as well as he did when he was in his prime. He's older now.
Their whole team, Jonathan, their whole team is terrible defenders. So, right. I mean, what'd you expect?
Right. So, wouldn't logic dictate that they would add a good defensive player?
Yeah, for sure.
Right. So, I mean, he's awful defensively. He's always been a pretty bad defender, but as he's gotten older, he's awful defensively. He doesn't shoot the three nearly as well as he used to, and he doesn't have a lot of play like experience. Like his last few stops were New York, L.A. I mean, I guess he played for Atlanta a little bit last season, but I mean, he's not got a lot of playoff experience to add to that core. I just don't see the fit. I mean, maybe I'll be wrong. Maybe he'll come out playing well. He'll have fit into a nice backup role, but I just don't see the fit.
Do you guys think it's a possibility that maybe he doesn't play much and he's just a guy to have around, you know, in that James Jones type role where, you know, you're just having a veteran and kind of get things going? I mean, he obviously is really getting up there in age too.
Yeah, that's certainly a possibility. And actually, Jonathan made some really good points on that. So I'm going to change my answer. Terrible, terrible thing. No, but yeah, we'll see what happens. I don't know. I'm a big believer in when you go to a winning environment, you step it up, and he is older, and maybe he has one more decent season in the tank.
No, hey, I think maybe he's just there to take over for Dante Jones so he doesn't get so many technicals. They just wanted a quiet guy in that role.
Yeah, right.
But so talking about guys who haven't got signed yet, some of the bigger names, we've kind of touched on them a little bit, but let's start with a Toronto guy, Kyle Lowry. What do we expect to see with Lowry? Are we going to expect him back in Toronto, or could another team swoop in like the Spurs and sign him?
Jonathan, that's your boy. What's going to happen?
I have very little doubt that he's going to re-sign with Toronto. I've always kind of thought he was going to be back. His kids are in school here, and from what I hear, they're doing well. They like it here. Toronto's a great city. Unfortunately, he's paying a lot more tax than he would be if he was in playing ball in the U.S. But, I mean, when you're making $20, $25 which I expect the Raps to offer him, tax is maybe not your first concern. So I expect him to stay. He's got a great relationship with DeMar DeRozan. The relationship with the coach is getting better. I don't expect him to leave anywhere. But the one team that I thought was a threat to sign him away was San Antonio. And they haven't really done much movement. There hasn't been much player movement in San Antonio yet, so I'm a little bit nervous. But I think he'll be back in Toronto.
Yeah, I think you're. I think you're spot on for the most part. For a few reasons, I don't think Lowry. To me, like, I just don't think he's a big heart guy. I don't see him going out and wanting to be the man anywhere. You know, we've seen a lot of shift in the point guards across the league. So the Wolves are kind of out. I think they were a big player. I think he'd be a great fit in San Antonio. And of course, to your point, he wouldn't be paying any income tax there. So that would be huge. But I'm not sure, you know, and I think that Ibaka move really precipitated them bringing back Lowry as well. I think, you know, if Ibaka went elsewhere, we would kind of see them shift towards maybe a more rebuilding stance. But I expect him to sign back in Toronto.
Well, and Jesse made a great point. The point guard market kind of dried up real quick. You know, first off, you had the Sixers trade for the number one pick. They drafted Markelle Fultz. That was a place that Kyle Lowry was tied to. The Brooklyn Nets traded for D'Angelo Russell. That was a team that might have had interest or drive the price up a little bit. Yep. Timberwolves signed Jeff Teague. And like you said, Jonathan, with the Spurs, they haven't really been doing much, but you never know with them because they do stay quiet and they just randomly make a move. But, you know, I think the market kind of forced them back to Toronto. And I think it also helped the Raptors a lot because they're not going to have to overpay as much as they would have had to in the first place.
Yeah, that's a huge factor. I think we can all agree that, you know, the point guard position is probably the deepest in the league easily. So, you know, that doesn't help them either.
Exactly. And then, like you mentioned earlier on the show, is, you know, the lack of playoff success Lowry's had, and that does scare some teams.
Well, let's be honest, though. That's not all Kyle's fault. I mean, the last two playoffs he's been injured going in, and he got hurt against Cleveland this year, and it's their system that's the biggest problem in Toronto, not the personnel.
But we'll see what happens with him. If you had to give it a take, your guys are going with him back in Toronto?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, very little doubt that he won't be back.
Unless we do see some sort of surprise with the Spurs. You know, who knows? Maybe somehow they still move Aldridge, which, you know, would be a shock at this point. Maybe sign a lesser big man, bring in Lowry, and make a move that way. But more than likely north of the border. Yeah.
Yes, I think you made a great point too, Jonathan, with the relationship he has with DeRozan. I think that's important. Relationships are very important in the league, and I think that's an underrated thing. But moving on to another guy, Paul Millsap. This is probably the best player left on the market right now other than Gordon Hayward. So if you guys had to go with Millsap, where do you see him landing? There's been talk about Denver going to Toronto, like Jonathan mentioned. So some teams have dropped out. Some teams have entered that pot. So where do you see Millsap landing?
I think we'll get a big idea on this probably by this evening or early tomorrow. With Gallinari's got a meeting set up with the Clippers today. The Nuggets kind of want him back. He's met with the Kings already. So maybe as we get some traction there, Millsap, I see him going to Denver personally. I don't think he's been necessarily very happy with Atlanta and the direction there. And, you know, he's a very skilled player, not necessarily the most athletic kind of big man we've seen, but like one of the truly, truly underrated players in the league for years. You know, and I think Nuggets will be willing to throw that big cash at him.
I think in a perfect situation, he'd end up with Houston, especially with that deal with Nene falling through. They've got a little bit more room cap-wise.
That would be awesome. That would be awesome, yeah.
I think that'd have to be a sign and trade, though.
I think you're right. And I think with most places that are interested in him, it'll have to be a sign and trade. And whether or not Houston have anything to trade anymore after that Chris Paul trade is a kind of huge question mark. But I think that's a perfect situation for him if they can find a way to make it work. Again, Toronto would be another place for him to go where, you know, he doesn't have to be the guy. He doesn't have to worry about carrying the load offensively. He can just kind of play his game. He's an underrated post defender. But another team that is interested in him and I think have the, you know, all the pieces in place to entice a guy like Millsap is Phoenix. And I think Phoenix would be a nice fit for him.
Well, Phoenix came out and reports have that Phoenix no longer is interested. You know, the report mostly said that ownership wanted to go with the rebuild because they realized how strong the West is. You know, adding a player like Millsap at this time wouldn't really help them enough. So I think they dropped out.
Yeah, I think positionally, I think you're right on, Jonathan. I just think, you know, as far as what they want to do, yeah, I think they said that they're, you know, just going to keep it young. I don't think it would make a lot of sense. You know, I don't think they expect to contend right away here.
Exactly. Especially with the amount of young guys, and especially they have at the power forward position too. But I think Millsap, any team that gets him is going to get a versatile piece that can help his team in like multiple ways. So it's like he can fit in so many different situations. The Denver situation, though, him and Jokic would be a really skilled duo.
Yeah. I think Jonathan, his point about him being a very skilled post defender is can't be overlooked. I think he is, you know, a fan. He's just a very technically smart player, which, you know, is obviously going to help any team.
And the biggest name on the market, you know, what everybody's been talking about the last few days, especially in Boston, Gordon Hayward. You know,
oh, like, never heard of him.
Never heard of him. It's officially, I think, down to three teams, Utah Jazz, Miami Heat, and Boston Celtics. What are you guys hearing on this? Where do you think Gordon Hayward lands?
Okay, well, I'll start this one, Jonathan. So I'm obviously, you know, in Boston, and so you know we've fallen through so many times with so many trades and free agents, and we know the long story of the hoarder Danny Ainge and all these picks, and it kind of feels like this is the make or break signing for right now. And of course, the Paul George saga that's recently kind of ended here with him somehow ending up in Oklahoma City, which I don't think anyone saw coming. So Gordon arrives last night at Logan Airport pretty late. Of course, Brad Stevens, the class act he is. And you guys may have heard, I don't know if you heard, but Brad Stevens actually coached Gordon Hayward in college. So he's there at the gate. They meet with him and his wife, Robin, and they walk in. Of course, droves of Celtics fans there as well. And then this morning they go over to Fenway, where I actually do some work part-time there as well. I wish I knew they were going. I would have stopped over. But on the scoreboard, you know, they welcome them. Then there's like a video montage of all the great Boston moments with, you know, David Ortiz. They had LeBron and Kobe talking about Celtics fans on there. It's a beautiful day here in Boston, maybe getting some seafood. And, of course, Brad would know about any of those allergies or anything that Gordon might have. So no problems there. So obviously a perfect fit for the Celtics. And I think I think that would put them right in contention with the Cavs coming up this year. Of course, I thought him and Paul George would have been a great fit, but there would have been, you know, we talk about positionless basketball these days, but I think that would have been a minor factor. I think both of them really wanting to play the three a lot. So, you know, we'll see what happens. It'll be a major push for him here, and everybody wants him.
Well, I've been hearing that he was impressed with the meeting in Miami, and I think...
Who told you that, Jonathan?
Well, it was kind of a side note, you know, after the hoopla that went on in Boston. I'd honestly be surprised if he didn't sign in Boston. I think the stars have kind of lined up nicely for the Celtics to get Hayward. I have a hard time thinking he'll stay in Utah. I mean, I know they've been successful. They've got a nice core in that team, but since a young guy at his age with his kind of money, I think a bigger market is probably a better fit for him. And I think Boston's a perfect team for him. Whether or not that helps them contend with the Cavaliers, I'm not sure he's going to be the difference maker there, but they'll definitely make them better, and they'll be better for years to come. So I think Boston's where he ends up. I think it's going to be a nice fit.
I think you made two great points. The bigger market, especially going to give him a little bit more star power, a little bit more endorsement deals playing in Boston and Miami. And then the fact that the Eastern Conference has lost so much talent this year, you know, looking going forward, you know, the East is going to be a lot easier. So I think it makes a lot more sense for Hayward to want to come East and play in the Western Conference.
I mean, that's got to be so intriguing to a player, right? I mean, especially, you know, the Western Conference was already far superior, and we see the further shift now. I mean, it just seems like a no-brainer. I mean, Miami is definitely a nice place to be. And, of course, another state with no income tax, which is a factor there. But, yeah, I mean, I you know, we're just – you know, and I try to separate my personal allegiance from actually looking at this like straightforward. And it just, I mean, the Celtics just seem to make the most sense.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely does because, I mean, you know, obviously I don't think this puts them past the Cavs, but it gets them in the realm. And then maybe the Cavs get an injury. Maybe Kyrie gets hurt, Kevin Love, or LeBron sprains his ankle for the first time ever. You know, maybe they have a chance. So we'll see what happens, though. Obviously, he's going to kind of be the domino effect. I think when Gordon Hayward lands, it's going to force a lot of different hands. What does the Celtics do? I know you wrote a great article about the Celtics, you know, fireworks or pop rocks, and it's kind of like, you know, is it going to be boom or bust? Do you think the Celtics are going to go after a lot of other guys, or are they going to stay pat if they lose out on Hayward?
Well, here's the thing about this offseason is that, you know, there's so many contracts in the next year that become, you know, a major factor. They've had these guys – on these young kind of rookie contracts and second contracts that were really a great value. They've had Avery Bradley on this contract for, I don't know, $8 or $9 million a year. When he signed it a couple years ago, people were like, that's a crazy high amount, but now it looks like a steal. So his contract is going to be up. Marcus Smart, and of course the huge, you know, linchpin is going to be Isaiah Thomas. And that's always, you know, he's obviously going to demand max money next season. So that's, you know, is a big three of Hayward, Isaiah Thomas, and Al Horford good enough? I don't know, you know. So that's going to be, you know, that's going to be the big variable is they really need to, it seems, to make a splash this offseason, and Hayward would be a great start. And, you know, we'll see if – I mean, the idea was that they were going to go and get George, of course, with the timing. You know, we know that they wanted to get Hayward first and then trade for George, and somehow the Pacers did what they did. I still can't figure that one out. But, yeah, we'll see what happens. I mean, I think what this Hayward signing does at least is makes the Celtics relevant to a high level over the next couple of years, but also not giving up all those draft picks, et cetera. I mean, the Celtics are obviously on the horizon for a serious contendership for the next decade plus. So,
we'll see. Yeah, just to kind of touch on that a little further, I mean, it is a big three of Thomas and Horford and Gordon Hayward going to be enough to beat the Cavs? Of course not, but I don't think that's necessarily the goal right now is to, you know, beat the Cavs in their current form. I think what Danny Ainge and the Celtics are planning on doing is just outlasting LeBron James in the Eastern Conference.
That's what it seems like. Yeah. You're right. And I mean, you know, Ainge is no dumb guy. He knows that once you get past, like, no one wants to make it to the finals and you pace it every year. So they know – you know, that there's at least another 3-4 years of favorable contracts for the Warriors as well until they really have to, you know, make some tough decisions. So that kind of time frame, I think, to your point, Jonathan, is definitely a factor.
Well, you mentioned this. Isaiah Thomas is going to be a free agent the next season. What do you think they're going to do with him? Does Hayward kind of give them some leverage where maybe they don't have to worry about losing him quite as much? Do they want to throw big money at Isaiah Thomas?
I don't think it gives the Celtics any leverage at all because I think it's going to be their decision. I think IT – IT, I mean, he's a Boston guy. He's out here in the streets. You see him all over the place. He's making appearances. I mean, everyone you know has met Isaiah Thomas here. He's that kind of guy. Like, he loves it here. You know, we know that he's been the ambassador and all these, you know, all these trips. And, you know, he was there. He's there today hanging out with Gordon right now and his wife. He wants to come back, but he's gonna demand the money to do it. I don't think he's gonna by any means take a smaller contract, and nor should he. So I think there's, you know, I don't think leverage is really, I mean, I think the facts are the facts in this case, and it's gonna be just a decision on what the Celtics think is best. And I think a lot of people over the past year, you know, this past year was just a crazy breakout season for him, right? So I think it's been this kind of shift of like, well, of course we wouldn't, you know, sign back Isaiah Thomas for huge money, but now, you know, given the right pieces around him, young talent, could we make it work? And to be honest, I'm still on the fence, because it's one of those things where, you know, I watch every Celtics game here, being in his home market, and it's just unbelievable to watch the fourth quarter efforts that he put in and his efficiency ratings in the fourth quarter. And, you know, it's hard to denounce that by any means, but at the same time, you know, he's a physically challenged player at his height of 4'11", et cetera. So, you know, I don't know. That's going to be a Celtics call. And I think what happens this season will be a big player in that.
Yeah, I think it's unfortunate that we're even talking about Isaiah Thomas, you know, a guy who averaged 29-6 during the regular season, in that kind of, well, is he worth a max contract type of conversation? But, you know, it's just unfortunate, because at his size, it really is difficult for teams to build around a point guard that's under 6 feet. So, yeah, it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate for both sides. It's unfortunate for Isaiah, because, you know, you'd think somebody who's been putting up those numbers would deserve a contract like that. But, you know, it's also unfortunate for the Celtics, because they're kind of damned if they do, damned if they don't. If they don't offer him a big contract, it's, you know, their disloyal franchise is going to look bad. If they do, then they're going to look foolish for putting all that money into a 5'8", 5'9". Guard. So, they don't really have a good option in front of them. So it'll be interesting to see what route they take. But it's just kind of an unfortunate situation. But it's the world of sports.
It's a tough call, because, you know, he's that preeminent, like, regular season player. And, you know, those nights when other guys are kind of taking a night off and the Hornets come in on the second night of a back-to-back, like, Isaiah's going to eat them up for 40 points and kind of inflate that average a little bit. But when it comes to the playoffs, he needs to be on a team with other great players, and that, you know, that huge contract, that's obviously tougher and tougher to do. So I think you put it really well, Jonathan.
One last point. Do you think it's a possibility that the Celtics move him at the deadline this year, or no chance?
I thought they should have traded him this offseason, to be honest. I thought that would have been a move, get a haul for him. I think a guy, you know, bringing a guy like Teague or trade for a guy like Rubio or something like that. Of course, I mean, the Celtics do need the scoring, so Rubio may not be a great fit. But I'm a big Terry Rozier fan, who got a guy a lot of people outside of Boston probably don't know a lot about. But, you know, he's been inconsistent. He's a young kid out of Louisville, but incredibly athletic at the guard position. I mean, you see him rebounding over four and fives all day long. So, you know, or trade for kind of a second tier kind of point guard, maybe, you know, bring in somebody on a diminished contract and move him and get a haul. But I mean, what are you going to do? Trade for more draft picks? I don't know. So again.
Yeah, I think, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, it's just a tough situation overall. Like you guys had mentioned, you know, either way, what they do, it's hard to trade a player that produces like that, but with his defensive liability, it's just hard to have him around in a championship aspirations.
Yep.
But another guy who's going to probably be a domino effect of Gordon Hayward signing, and that's Gallinari. You know, teams will probably start going after him a little bit harder if they don't land Hayward, because obviously he's an offensive threat at the small forward, maybe power forward position. Where do you guys see Gallinari landing? Does he head to a different team? Does he end up in L.A., or does he re-sign with Denver?
Jonathan, what do you think, man?
It's tough to say. I mean, he's one of those guys, he's talented. He's as talented, you know, three or four as any guy in the NBA, but he just can't stay on the floor long enough to produce for a whole season. I think in a perfect world, it looks like if Denver don't make a move for a Paul Millsap,
then I think there's a good chance he stays in Denver. But I mean, he's another guy who could fit in that Houston with that Houston roster and kind of light things up over there. So it'll be interesting to see where he lands, but he's got a few options to himself.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. I think that's pretty much spot on. I think there's a ton of guys who we'd love to see in Houston this year, just to kind of add some contention out there in the West for sure. But I think Gallinari's set to meet with the Clippers tonight in LA, so we'll see what happens there. I think if he doesn't go back to the Nuggets, I see him as a Clipper, and that'll depend on the Millsap ordeal.
And Jonathan has mentioned this on a previous podcast, is, you know, Gallinari seems like a guy that would want to play in a big city too. You know, he liked playing in New York, so he probably would like playing in LA. Yep. And in LA, it's been mentioned that they've been trying to trade for him for years, so they really want him. I think they might have to move a contract or something if they do want to sign him, but definitely a possibility there. There even was talk about Denver trying to bring in Gallinari and Millsap together, so see what happens on that front as well.
And hey, he could be a Celtics plan DERF as well.
He could be a backup plan for them, obviously. And Jonathan mentioned, you know, like, he's his talented player, especially offensively. It's just an injury. You know, when he stays on the court, he's great to have, but there's a good chance that he's going to miss games.
I mean, once those big guys start to get those kind of little injuries and you're dealing with lower extremities, it's a scary proposition.
And a few more free agents before we get out of here. George Hill, this is a point guard on the market. Obviously, some ties to the Spurs. There's some talk about him maybe going back to Indiana, back to the Pacers. Where do you guys see Hill landing?
I don't know. I feel like maybe the Knicks try and make a run at him. I don't know. He like changed agents this week kind of out of nowhere, which I think, you know, might have been an indictment on Utah a little bit. So with a guy who's been his financial advisor for years. So you wonder, like, what was going on there. Word is the Spurs are out on that. So, yeah, I think the Pacers are big players there as well, like you said. But, you know, I think New York would be a good spot for him to land.
Yeah, New York seemed like the type of team to throw big money at a guy like Hill. And, I mean, he deserved it. He played well last season. But another guy that just can't seem to stay on the court. I personally think if he's smart, or if the Spurs are smart, that, you know, that's a perfect match there. I think he fits in nicely to take over for Tony Parker. I think he does everything that Pop wants from a player. He's a good defender. He's a good three-point shooter. He's a system guy. So I think that would be a perfect fit. But like you said, maybe not in the Stars. But New York, if you know, they're either going to throw some money at Derrick Rose or going to throw it at George Hill. And, you know, based on last year's production, believe it or not, they're kind of the same player at this point in their careers. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Well, I think George Hill's more of a lot more efficient player and more of like a winning type player. You know, compliment your guys more. He's not as ball dominant. I would prefer George Hill over Derrick Rose. But I think the issue for the Knicks, it was talked about, it was a report that they didn't want to throw the money at George Hill because they don't necessarily have a ton of cap space. So they'd kind of just sit on the young guys and wait to, you know, another offseason. I think, like you said, though, Jonathan, with the Spurs, it would just make 100% sense. Popovich loves Hill. Hill loves Popovich. So I think that's a good combination.
Yeah, I think that would be ideal. I think that would be ideal too. Yeah, San Antonio.
You're telling me the Knicks don't want to throw a lot of money at a risky free agent? That is the most un-Knicks thing I've ever heard of.
I mean, they got smart. I mean, they fired Phil Jackson, and now they're not throwing money away, and they actually might just rebuild the team the right way.
If only they had done it 2 weeks earlier, and they could have actually got Dennis Smith and had a decent pick there in the first round. But we'll see.
It's the Knicks, so we'll see what happens with that. We'll touch on two restricted guys, Otto Porter and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. There's a lot of rumors that both these guys are going to get max. What do you guys think are going to happen? Do you think they end up back at the respective teams in Washington and Detroit, or do you think they end up elsewhere?
Otto Porter, I think he's meeting, Sacramento today. I know your guys, the Brooklyn Nets, want in there, Nick, too, as well. To me, he's not worth that money. That's just me. I watched him play a lot. He's a very good player, don't get me wrong. I'm not giving him max money.
I've been hearing reports that the Wizards are prepared to match any offer that they that Otto Porter receives. So I think he'll stay with the Wizards regardless of whether he gets offered a max or not. As for Pope, if he's offered a max contract, I honestly would be surprised. I don't think he's worth anywhere near a max contract at this point in his career, and I don't know that Detroit would match a contract that big for him.
Yeah, I agree with you. I would go with Porter. I mean, if I was going to max either guy out, I'd rather max out Otto Porter just because he's improved a lot. He's only 24 years old. You're going to see more improvements most likely in a bigger role, hopefully. KCP, it's just a little bit nervous with his offensive game. Obviously, defensively, he's a great player, and he brings that energy and toughness. But, you know, how much further is he going to develop, and how much money are you going to be throwing at him?
I think what teams hope for with Pope, I mean, I've seen nights with him where he looked like the best player on the court, and there's nights where he's not even in the building, you know. So he is definitely, you know, and by his age at this point in his career, he should definitely be more consistent. So, yeah, Otto Porter would definitely a lot of upside. I'm surprised the Wizards came out and said that they have said that they would match all offers, including a max. I mean, that's a fact. I was kind of surprised by that.
And I mean, it could be talk, you know, obviously you see the tax bill and you're like, well, we're going to have to pay this much. And you know, what are we going to do? So type of thing, they might end up trying to move a contractor. Some talk about them maybe moving like Gortat or something like that. So we'll see what happens.
I'm a big Gortat guy. I think he's one of the most underrated guys in the league too. He's a good player.
Maybe ends up in Boston. So
it'd be a good fit. That'd be a great fit.
It would. So see what happens there. Obviously, free agency has been crazy. You know, guys, head to otgbasketball.com. We got the free agent tracker for you. Got all the deals in one place. But Jonathan, Jesse, great for coming on. Everybody, thanks for listening. Enjoy the rest of free agency and happy 4th of July.
Yes, yes. Be good, fellas. Good to talk to you.
Take care, guys. Always a pleasure.